Welcome to the Providence Bible Church Podcast. We're a group of people who just want to love God, love people, and change the world. We meet each Sunday at Outback Crab Shack at 8:30 and at Ward's Creek Elementary School at 11 o'clock. You can find out more about Providence by visiting www.providencebiblechurch.com.
Well, I did Thursday and Friday. Had a great time. I took Ben, our son that we adopted from Romania. He's 17 now, and he's kind of in a boarding school out in West Florida, a little ways. It's really kind of central west near I-10, 75 there. And he's about to finish school. It's going to be great for him. But he'd never been to Itchituttany. And how many of you have ever been to Itchituttany? It's just fun to say, Itchituttany. And it's a great river in Florida. You should go. Everybody should go. You should go check it out because it's crystal clear water. It's 72 degrees year round, and it flows a couple miles an hour, and it's really neat. And you can rent inner tubes near there, or boats, and little inflatable boats. And we brought snorkels and we brought the kayak, and we went and then got in there, and we decided to float down the river. And as we're doing this, we got in. We weren't even in the kayak at first, but when I pulled in, the girl at the gate told me, I said, how do we do this so we can come back and get the kayak? And she goes, well, you just need to take him to the exit point. No, leave him here with the kayak, and you drive the car to the south entrance, and then you catch the trolley back to the north entrance, and then you go down, and then you'll take your boat out where your car is and all that. And I went through all that, and I said, well, is there another option? She goes, oh, yeah, it's really a lot better. What you could do, what else you could do is you could just leave your car here and go all the way to the end and paddle back up. And I said, well, okay, no problem. I said, are you sure about that? She goes, yeah, the water's only like a mile of an hour or something. It's not a big deal. So I said, well, man, we'll go for that. Because then when you come back up to the top, it's not, there's not as many people because they only let 750 people go down in a day. And so then we have we're going back up, and it would be just all, we have it all to ourselves, and it'd be really neat. And there's a spring up there that we can go in, and we can go in the spring and snorkel a deep blue spring. It was really, really nice. And so we went up there and all that. That was not the best thing to do, was to paddle back up, I found, because we went down and that was kind of fun. But then on the way back up, see, Ben is, I mean, he's from Romania. He hasn't spent a whole lot of time. He grew up in a kind of an orphanage over there. He didn't really know a whole lot about paddling a kayak. So I only had one paddle, too. That was kind of the problem. So I'd let him paddle some, but we would go like this back and forth, and we wouldn't really get where we were trying to go. And so then I would have to take the thing. So I basically paddled all the way back up. It takes 4 hours to drift it, they say. I think we did it in about an hour. So then coming back up, I don't even know how long it took, but I mean, I'm still sore today from it. And I came home, got home late Friday night, and I don't know if you've ever, gone on a vacation where when you get home, you need a vacation from your vacation. I did that. That's kind of how I feel. And we do that a lot. And we go off and we're supposed to be resting. We're supposed to be taking it easy. And we don't. And then we get home and it's like we're more tired than we were when we first started. And that's kind of how it is with a lot of things in life, isn't it? We'll go out and we think we're doing things that are going to make us feel better, and they just wear us out. In fact, like last night when I went to bed around 11 o'clock, and I just didn't get to sleep real well. I think at 12 o'clock, I think a little kid came in our room and was kicking me or somebody, so we had to get them back in their bed, and that was kind of tough. And then about 1 o'clock, we're sitting there, and all of a sudden I hear this noise. I don't know why. I was already awake. I didn't even realize I was awake, but I was awake. And then all of a sudden I hear this huge crash in the bathroom. And apparently the cat had gotten in there in the tub and was playing around trying to get some water and had knocked the kids had this big boat that they play with in the tub and knocked their thing in the tub. And so that woke us up again. And it seems like I woke up at 4 for some reason. I'm not sure exactly why, but I remember waking up at 4. And the alarm went off at 5, the most annoying sound in the world is that alarm. And so that goes off at 5. And then, so I, of course, I'm spiritual, so I hit the snooze button. And because, that's what really spiritual people do. And I hit the snooze button, and then it went off again at 5:15 or whatever time it goes off again. And it was just a rough night. And you wake up just kind of tired. You ever do that? You ever wake up just feel like, I intended to go sleep, go rest, and I just didn't get the rest that I was after. Life's like that a lot of times, isn't it? I mean, do you remember before you got this job how you thought that once I get this job, everything's going to be perfect, it's going to be easy, it's going to fix all my problems, all my bills are going to go away, everything's going to work out good, you know? And then you realize, I mean, there's a lot of work here, or there's a lot of stuff to get done. I've got to get this project done. And it seems like one thing keeps coming after another. Or you thought, man, if I just make it to my junior year of high school, that's going to be it. Everything's going to be problem. I won't have any of this problem. I'm going to do my homework from date. Like, your school hasn't started yet. We're thinking, okay, I'm going to keep up with my homework. I'm not going to fall behind. Everything's going to be good. And you get in there, and you're going to realize that, man, there are all these activities to do. There's all this stuff that distracts me, and I still haven't gotten it done. Sometimes we do it, and we stress about these things, don't we? Do you ever do that? You ever stress about the stuff like what's going to happen? What if we don't get the work done? What if we don't get the bill paid? What if the test reports come back from the doctor and say that it's positive and that we have this deal that we have to deal with? What if we have to? What if it doesn't work out? What if I forgot something important? I have all this to do, and we're so busy, and we're running around trying to get things done the right way, and we're afraid you're going to miss something? Some people are like that with church. You ever feel that way about God? Like he's got a whole lot that he wants you to do. This is a big book, right? And we're supposed to do what this book says. And there's a lot in there, man. And I mean, what if I miss the most important one? What if I don't do it all right? What if I mess up? What do we do then? Well, what if you left heaven? Let's say it wasn't about going to college or going to school or going to high school or getting your job or even, you know, in your family, where we work hard, try to make things good for them. But what if you left your comfort zone, where you had a situation where you were really adored, where everything was going great, and everything went exactly the way that looked really good, and you left to go help some people. And when you left that situation to go help these people, not only did they not recognize you, but they took your partner, the guy that was supposed to be telling people about what you were doing, and they threw him in prison. And then when they threw him in prison, then they started really violently opposing everything you were trying to do when you were just trying to help them. And then the worst part of it is when you're working in this certain area, all the people in that area just kind of ignore you. And it'd be like your own kids. You try to help them, and they don't ever recognize it or ever say thank you or ever acknowledge the fact that even though you're doing stuff that they don't like necessarily, that you're doing what's best for them. Well, that's kind of what happened with Jesus here in Matthew 11. Matthew 11, we've been going through this, and remember we talked about how John the Baptist came, and he's born really to tell people about who Jesus is. And as he does it, he gets thrown in prison, because he stands up against the king or the governor at that time, and he stands up against him and tells him that what he's doing is wrong, and so he throws him in prison. And he's in prison, ultimately ends up getting beheaded, but while he's there, he's thinking, you know, I didn't sign up for this. It should be a lot better than this. It's supposed to be different. And he's there, so he sends his disciples, the guys that are following him, to go ask Jesus, say, are you really the Messiah, or should we look for another? And Jesus tells and sends them back and says, you go tell them, the things you've seen and the heard, the blind are healed, the lame walk, and, I'm here, I'm doing the work that Messiah does. And so these guys go back, and everybody's standing around thinking, man, what's John the Baptist doing, questioning whether or not Jesus is the Messiah? So he goes on to explain that John the Baptist is one of the greatest prophets that's ever lived. And then they said there that those that come after him are going to be greater than the least in the kingdom of heaven is even greater than John the Baptist. And that was you and me and how we're typing a message with our life. And the reason he said we're greater than John the Baptist is not because we're better than him, but because the message that we have is clearer than his. Because he didn't have the full message of the fact that Jesus died for people's sins and was buried and rose again. He knew he was Messiah, but we don't think he really fully grasped what all that was and how our life gives a message to people. And we need to make sure that it gives the right message, that Jesus is the Messiah. And then it got a little tough, and he started to talk about that generation in verse 16, how they were like children sitting in the marketplace, calling their companions and saying, we played the flute for you, you did not dance, we mourned you, and you did not lament. In other words, you didn't play the games we wanted you to play, God. You didn't respond. We were trying to make you do what we wanted you to do, but you didn't do what we wanted you to do. You did what you wanted to do, and we didn't want to fall in line with that. And what's amazing is, and he talks about how it's a tough deal, and they complain against John because, he was too austere, and they complain about Jesus because they say he hangs out with too many sinners, and Then in, he doesn't really even give them the strictest rebuke. The strictest rebuke that we talked about last week is in verse 20. And in verse 20, he begins to rebuke the cities in which his mighty works have been done because they didn't repent. And he actually said these three cities where he had done all these miracles, Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum, and he said it's really going to be better for wicked cities like Tyre and Sidon and Sodom than it will be for you. And it's not that these people were violently opposed to Christ. They let him walk among them. They just ignored him. They saw who he was. They were exposed to the truth. And they didn't repent. They didn't respond properly. And so when you look at this situation right here, if we just were watching it on some reality show, we would say, man, things are not going well for Jesus right now. I mean, here he is. He's done all these miracles, and the places where he's done most of his ministry, the majority of the people there are just ignoring him. And he just pronounced a curse on them, basically. And this isn't how it was supposed to be. Surely this wasn't God's plan. I mean, John's in prison. People are violently opposing them. He's losing disciples. This doesn't look good at all. Have you ever been in a situation like that where you thought it was going to work out one way, and it didn't? Maybe you thought, if I just get married, then everything's going to be fine. Or if I could just get to the next grade, if I could just get that date, if I could just get that job, everything's going to work out fine. And then you get in that situation and you realize, wow, that person that I married that was supposed to fix everything, they're a sinner just like me. And we have to learn to live together. Or, I thought that if I followed Christ, then all this financial stuff would work out, and it just hasn't worked out the way that I thought it would, or I thought that this was going to work out one way and it didn't. And it's looking like it's, and everybody looks at you and thinks, you made a wrong decision. What are you doing in that situation? You made a bad choice. How should we respond to that? I think that we can learn from Jesus how we should respond to that. And if we respond the way that he responded, I think that it will change everything about how you view those situations, how you view your year at school, how you view your marriage, how you view your job, how you view that news that you got from the doctor or the mechanic. Look what Jesus does in verse 25. That at that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank you, Father. Wait a minute. Jesus. Things aren't going according to plan here. You're supposed to be, you came to seek and save the lost. People aren't paying attention to you. You've just pronounced a curse on three cities. John the Baptist is still in prison. In fact, he knows he's going to the cross. You're going to be crucified. And you're thanking God? That seems odd, doesn't it? That's not our natural reaction, is it? What was your reaction, the first thing to do whenever it didn't work out the way, when your truck blows up? What's your first reaction? Not thank God, is it? It's, I can't believe it. What's the first reaction, when you lose the job? When you open the drawer, the bill drawer, and you realize, I forgot to pay that, and now I have to pay a late fee. What's your first reaction when you get the call and they say, I just want to be friends? Is that okay? You know what that means, right? So, I just want to be friends. And how does that go for you? What's your first reaction? Is it a thank God? It can be, and it should be, because that's what Jesus was. Look what he says here. He says, I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth. And here's what he thanks him for. And it's pretty amazing, because he says, because you have hidden these things from the wise and prudent and have revealed them to babes. When he says, you've hidden these things from the wise and prudent, I love it. I love God. One of the things I love about God is a lot of times, especially if you read Job and you read about what he says, sometimes he can be a little sarcastic. And he says things, and Paul writes the same way, and God moved through Paul to do it. And when he says, you've hidden these things from the wise and prudent, there's a hint of sarcasm there, because he's not saying you won't reveal yourself to people that are smart, because he does that all the time. Paul was very intelligent. There are a lot of people that are very smart that he reveals himself to. But he says, you've hidden these things from the wise and prudent. And when he says the wise and prudent, what he's talking about are the people that think they have it all together. The people that think they have all the answers, the people that think that trust in their own wisdom and their own abilities, people that come to God and say, God, I'm here and I am bringing you something good. Well, you are getting a deal if I sign up. Like if I sign up to follow you, you're getting one of the best, and it's going to work out really good for you, God. I'm such a blessing to your kingdom. kind of thing. He says, you've hidden it from those things. He's really talking about the Pharisees and the Sadducees. These are the people that knew how to keep the rules. In fact, they were making rules for other people and helping them keep the rules. These are the people everybody looked at and said, boy, those people, they've got it all together. But they wouldn't bow the knee and humble themselves and admit that Jesus was Messiah. They wouldn't turn from their sin and place their faith in Christ. And he says, those are the kind of people, you've hidden this from them, but you've revealed it to babes. And when he says babes there, he's not talking about cute girls. He's not talking about little kids either, but he's using that kind of thing of baby, kind of a young infant. You've revealed it to people that realize they're like infants. How many of you had an infant in your home? You ever had an infant in your house? You've been an infant in your house. Everybody, okay, good. I was just checking. So you've been an infant. You've had an infant. Now tell me this. When we had our babies, they contribute a lot now. They can take out the trash. They can clean up their mess. They can do, you know, they can do all kind of stuff. But man, when that thing's little, what does it contribute? What do they contribute? Noise, dirty diapers, and doctor bills, right? I mean, that's pretty much it. And so they can scream, and everybody is supposed to come help them, but they don't come. They don't show up going, hey, I'm here to make your life easier. They don't do that, do they? They just show up saying, hey, I'm here, and I'm needy. I need food. I need sleep. I need my nap. I need clothes. I need somebody to change my clothes. I need somebody to clean up after me. I need somebody to, you know, make me some good food. And that's kind of their whole deal. They don't show up to contribute anything. He says, you've revealed yourself, this gospel, to people who come to you saying, God, I have nothing to offer. I am in need, and I am in desperate need. I can't save myself. I'm like a baby. I can't. I'm not blessing you. I'm not making this place better. I'm a sinner, and I've broken your law, and I can't be good enough. I can't do enough good stuff to make up for the bad that I've done. I can't make myself righteous. If I'm ever going to be righteous, it's because you make me right, because you took care of me, because you fed me, because you changed my clothes, because you helped me. And that's what he says here. You've hidden it from the wise and prudent and revealed it to babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in your sight. And there's the reason he said, why did he do that? Because he wanted to. And what Jesus does here, he's just acknowledging, recognizing, and showing everyone else that God just does what he wants. And he doesn't ask us a whole lot of times, does he? Because you've revealed it to these people and hidden it from these people, and the reason is because you wanted to. It's the way you set it up, and you chose to do that. And look at verse 27. And he's telling about his, you know, everybody's looking and saying, hey, things are really out of control, Jesus. What's going on? And he says, things are not out of control. The things in your life that you think, God, where are you? God, what's going on? Why are you letting this happen? He says, I haven't lost control. All things have been delivered to me, he says, by my Father. And no one knows the Son except the Father. That's God's plan. Nor does anyone know the Father except the Son and the one to whom the Son wills to reveal him. So if you know God and you know who he is today, it's not because you were smarter, brighter, wiser, faster. It's because God chose to reveal himself to you. And Jesus did that. And he's the one that's responsible for that. And he says, basically, I'm in control. Even though it may not look like it, even though you may not fully understand it, God wanted to do it this way, and this is how we do it. And so whoever I reveal myself to, that's who gets to see me. I love my dad because he's just a fun guy to be around. And fun guy, not like a mushroom or anything, but a fun guy. And he went to, and we're driving in the car. When I was a kid, I always sit in the back because I'm a kid. So I would sit in the back, and my dad's driving the car. And sometimes he would just reach up and just kind of stretch with his hands like this and kind of go like this. And I'm sitting in the back going, Dad, what are you doing? Dad, don't you need to be, because we're going on the interstate, you know? I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? You know, come on. You need to keep your hands on the wheel, Dad, because I'm 12 and I know everything, right? So I'm thinking, Dad, you got to drive the car. But he didn't. He had control the whole time, didn't he? Because you guys know that, right? He had his knee on the wheel, right? So he's doing, because you do that, don't you? Have to be able to do that to drink your coffee and talk on the phone, right? And drive and put on your makeup at the same time. You got to be able to use your knee, right? So he's driving. He's in total control of the car, but I was scared because I thought he didn't have control of the car, but he did the whole time. Just like we were going to Panama. We were flying from Costa Rica to Panama, and this little 12-passenger plane, we're sitting right behind the guys that are flying the plane, and they have a sandwich up here. It was scary because the whole time, one of the guys is like reading the book to the other guy, and I didn't really feel good about that. But then at one point in the plane, I have it on video, at one point in the flight, I'm noticing this one guy's over here kind of doing this, and the other guy's just sitting here like this. And nobody's flying the plane, man. I'm like, it's just. I mean, there's a small plane, and I'm just sitting right behind him, going, I want to go, guys, you need to put your hands on the wheel or something, don't you? I mean, there could be, I don't know what could come through here, some kind of air thing, pocket thing, turbulence or something. You know, I'm thinking, what's going to happen? You know, and I guess they had an autopilot, but they were totally in control. They were fine. They were laughing and relaxed, and they weren't worried about it. So why should I have been? Because I don't know how to fly a plane. That's what we do with God, though, a lot of times, isn't it? Because we look at our circumstances and our situations, and we say, God, this looks out of control. I don't really like the way this is going. And hey, God, I'm looking at you, and I don't even see your hands on the wheel. I don't understand what's going on, God. Have you totally just forgotten about me? Have you totally left this situation up to chance? Or are you really still in control? But God really is in control. And that's what Jesus is telling them here. And he's really telling that, especially when it comes to salvation. He's in control. But you know what's interesting? There are some people that read this and take this, and some of my dear friends too, that, you know, we understand the sovereignty of God and salvation, and that's a great deep truth that I don't think anyone can ever fully comprehend. But some people take that truth and say, well, if God's sovereign in salvation, saves who he wants to save, so we don't have to tell anybody. We just, you know, God's going to save them, right? It's up to him, right? But it's kind of interesting that Jesus doesn't take that route, does he? And I don't take that route. And this has been really good for me, because what I do, I love telling people about Jesus. And it doesn't make any sense to me why someone would not come to Christ. I mean, think about it. I mean, if I can have my sin totally forgiven, I get to live forever in heaven with God, and I get to follow one that knows everything and loves me unconditionally. Why would you turn away from that? Why would you want to go your own way? It doesn't make any sense. And I get frustrated sometimes when people don't come to Christ. But this reminds me, you know what? It's not up to me. It's up to God. My job's to tell. And in fact, the cool thing is, Jesus doesn't say, okay, so because I'm in charge of it, then we'll just do that. But he gives this open invitation to everybody there, doesn't he? Look at verse 28. It says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. That's the most important thing I want you to get today. Listen, whatever your troubles are, the solution is not a new program. It's not a new book. It's not an organization. It's not trying harder. It's getting the point in your life where you say, God, I'm going to come to you. It's going to Jesus. Jesus is he's the answer. He's the only way to get to heaven. He's the only way. I mean, he's it. He says, come to me, not to an organization, not to a new way of thinking. It is a new way of life. But come to me, all you who labor, those that are working and are heavy laden. And look what he says, I will give you rest. And those that labor and are heavy laden, there are people, I think he's addressing people that have come under this teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees that said, here's 333 laws that you have to keep, and when you break one, you're going to be in trouble. And if you break one, you're going to be wrong with God, and you're not going to be accepted by God, and you've got to do all this other stuff to get right with God again. You've got to go through this whole system, and we still do that today, don't we? Man, you know, if I'm wrong with somebody and do something wrong, maybe if I just give a little more money at church, then that'll help me. Or if I just go do this religious activity, if I just pray this prayer a bunch of times over and over again, that's going to get my penance or whatever it is. And we feel like if I work harder, then I'll be right with God. And then I'll be better. And that'll wear you out, won't it? Some people, I mean, haven't been in church in a long time because they couldn't live up to all the extra rules the guys were throwing out at them. You're going to come and follow Christ, you've got to dress this way. You've got to have your hair cut this way. You've got to listen to this. You can't go there. And there are certain things that God teaches you, and you want to live a separate life and stay away from sin, obviously. But I'm telling you, there's a whole bunch of rules that churches have thrown in that God never put there. That's why we just want to go by the Bible. And it's frustrating. And these people are worn out, and they've been trying to earn favor with God, and they can't. He says, come to me, all you that labor, and I will give you rest. Look at verse 29. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. He says, come to me and follow me and listen to me. Now, a yoke, you know what a yoke is? The yellow part of the egg. That's a different yoke. It's a different yoke. A yoke was a thing that you put around the ox, and you hook up the stuff to them. Stuff, whatever, what's the stuff called? Somebody help me out. Reins, yeah, you hook up reins to them or something like that. So you hook this stuff up to him, and you put the plow on the back, and then he can pull the plow through the ground or the cart or whatever it is that you have him pulling. And this yoke, Jesus says, you come to me, and really yoke was used in that time. As when you were following somebody, you took their yoke and you followed their teachings, you did what they taught, and that was kind of the deal there. But another thing they did with yokes a lot of times too was, and Jesus says his yoke is easy, his burden is light. What they would do with yokes is they had the double yoke. It was kind of a high-end deal. You had to go to Lowe's and get one of the double yoke. And so you get them together, and what they would do is they would take an older, stronger ox, and they would yoke it up, not with another older, stronger ox, but they would yoke it up with a young, inexperienced, weaker ox. And then when they're out there and they're pulling the car, they're plowing the ground or whatever it is they're doing, you know who's doing most of the work? The older, stronger ox. And the younger ox is going along learning. How do I act in this thing? What do I do? Which way do we turn? Where do we go? And he's learning from the older one. And Jesus is saying, that's kind of how my yoke is. I'm the one kind of really doing all the work. And you just come along for the ride. And you can learn. My friend Buddy, who pastors Ward's Creek Baptist Church, he was mowing his grass a couple days ago. His 5-year-old daughter, Kelsey, came out and she wanted to mow the grass too. He had a push mower. And so he said, sure, you can mow the grass. You can help me. You're going to help me, right? She said, sure. So he let her grab the little handle that's down here, and he's really holding the thing up here and pushing it. And they're going around the yard, they're mowing the grass. And you get done, you talk to Kelsey, and she says, yeah, me and Daddy mowed the grass. She didn't push that thing at all. I mean, she's 5. She couldn't mow the grass. But she was in there with him, right? And she was doing it. That's what Jesus says. He says, come join me. And what I'm doing, I'm reaching this world. I'm changing this world. You can join me. And you can get involved in my activities, and that'll be a great thing. Or if you want to come get to heaven, come join me. You have to get with me to get to heaven. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. You have to come to me, though. You're not going to get there by being good. You're not going to get there by trying harder. You're not going to get there by trying to figure it all out. And you won't get there by looking at the circumstances and saying, God, I don't like the way these are. They have to change, and I'm going to make sure they change. You get there by saying, God, I thank you that you're in control. I'm going to follow you. Help me to respond to this situation, whether it's at work, whether it's your family, in a way that really honors you, in a way that shows that I believe that you are in control. 2 things I want to give you. 1 thing I want to give you right now real quick that'll help you, I think. This week, here you go. Take one of these and pass them around, pass them back. Take one and pass it back. This is something for you to just stick in your car, in your locker, or on your mirror somewhere. You can take 2 if you want. One part of this, I want you to memorize these verses, Matthew 11, 28 through 30. But also the first thing is that I want us to realize is what Jesus said was, basically in context, what he said was, since God is in control, you can find rest for your soul. You don't have to stress, you don't have to worry, you don't have to fret, because God has not taken his hands off the wheel. So since God is in control, I can find rest for my soul. Kind of rhymes too, doesn't it? That's the kind of stuff you think of when you drive way out I-10 and it's really a boring long drive. You start to worry about iambic pentameter and you come up with things that rhyme like this. So I worked really hard on this. So I want you guys, we're going to say it together. You ready? We're going to learn it. You ready? Since God is in control, I can find rest for my soul. Now we can say it better than that, right? You ready? Since God is in control, I can find rest for my soul. Do you really believe that? What if we really believe that? I mean, I think we do, but I mean, so many times I forget it, don't you? When you get the flat tire and you're like, oh man, how did this happen? I'm going to be late now. Just stop. Say, you know what, God, you're in control. God, you knew this was going to happen. You must have some other plan. God, I'm working as hard as I can on my marriage, and it's just not, things aren't changing the way I want them to change, and I don't know what to do, what else to do, but it looks like you're not in control, but God, I know you're in control. So God, instead of me worrying about changing the other person, I want to change me. And I want to live in a way that shows that I believe that you're in control. And you find rest in that. You really, really do. And at work, instead of having to change the whole situation, you say, God, today, regardless of how it turns out, in the end, my job is to work for you and to honor you. And if it works out the way the boss wants it to or the customer wants it to, that's great. And if it doesn't, I know you're still in control and I'm still going to trust you. The most important thing is whether or not you have taken his yoke upon him, whether or not you're with him, whether or not you've really, really gotten in there. And that's why I have the kayak here today. Because here's the deal. This is my ocean kayak. It may be for sale now because I'm kind of tired of it now. That was a lot of stuff. But here's the deal. The problem was we had 1 paddle, right? So we're going down the river, and I'm in the back, and most of the time I'm paddling because, well, you know, we already went through the thing with Ben. So I'm cruising, and we can miss people. I'd let him paddle sometimes, but when there was a big crowd ahead of us, I would always like say, hey, son, give me the paddle back. And so I would take the paddle in and I would, you know, steer us through it. We would always miss him whenever I was steering. If he was driving, I think we might have actually hit him. Well, so I'm sitting back here with the paddle having a good time. And he got a little bit bored sometimes, I think. But he was sitting up here. Let me show you what he's doing. So he's sitting here like this. And I'm back there paddling. And this is pretty much it. He's laying back, man. He's having a good time. He's just chilling. He's just having a good time. It's pretty cool. He's resting while I'm doing all the work. I'm thinking, man, I'm the dad. I didn't sign up for this. You know, I should be resting, and he should be doing all the work. But he didn't know how to paddle. So I let him paddle some on the way back. I got tough. But what was funny was, as we're coming back up, all these other people, I think they were seeing him and not me paddling hard. Because all these people come by us in the inner tubes were going, man, that's the way to do it. Boy, that's cool. That's neat, as we're going against the current. And I'm paddling my brains out. And they said, man, that's really, really good. That's neat. Can you rent those things? Where do you get one of those? Boy, that's a good idea. I mean, I'm telling you, I heard that 100 times. And then we were past everybody, and it was totally quiet. But the difference between Ben and those people was I invited Ben to get in the kayak with me. And he heard me, and then he said, you know what? I'm going to do that. I'm buying into that. He could have said when he was 12, he could have said, no, I don't want to be adopted. I don't want to leave this orphanage. I don't want to go to America. But he didn't, and he came. And he could have said, Daddy, I don't think I want to go in that kayak and go down the river. But he didn't, but he came. And so he's in the kayak, and he's responded to the invitation, and he's there. And he's enjoying the ride, and he's relaxing. There's other people that are looking at it saying, that's a good idea. I think that I'd like to do that. That looks like it'd be fun. They're still going the other way. They're still just floating in their little inner tubes and going on down the river. And Ben's up here enjoying the ride. Now, here's the thing. Here's the deal. There's a couple things with this. Number one, if you're trying to do this from God, have you ever done that? Have you ever sat, you're sitting in the front of the kayak, you know, I'm really here for the ride, but God, give me the paddle because I know better than you and I can do it my way and I'm going to do it the right way. You're going to end up paddling like Ben. And it makes it harder and it takes longer and you end up running into, you ever been in the, I hate being in the front of the boat when the person in the back of the boat doesn't know how to drive and they put you up underneath the bush. You ever done that? And you think there's a wasp nest in there or something. But I mean, you're going to end up in these bad situations. You got to say, God, I'm in your boat. You drive. But before that, you've got to say, God, I realize I can't do anything. I'm like a baby. I need your help. I want to get in your boat. I want to surrender my life to you. I want to give my life to you. I'm placing my whole body, my whole future, my whole self in your hands. I'm not going to try to swim. I'm not going to try to. I'm just, God, if you don't get me to heaven, I'm not going to get there. I believe that Jesus died on the cross for my sin. And he was buried. He rose again the third day. And he did that because I'm a sinner and my sin had to be paid for. And I believe he paid for my sin. And your word says that if I turn from my sin and place my faith in you, you'll forgive me. That's what I'm doing, Lord. And if you've never done that, I encourage you to do that. You got to get in the boat. It's not enough to look and say, hey, I think it's a good idea. Yeah, I believe he could do that if he wanted to, and I think it's a great thing, and I'm going to try harder and be better. It's not going to work. You've got to say, God, here it is. Here's my life. But here's the thing that we do as Christians is we do that, and we'll say, yeah, I did that. And God, you're in control, and I can find rest for my soul, but I've got to fix this situation. You couldn't handle this, or you don't care about this. Imagine how different our lives would be if we really believed God was in control, if we really left it up to him. If you really found rest for your soul, you'd actually get more done. You'd be more productive. You'd be happier. You'd have less stress. You didn't realize, I don't have to change my wife. I don't have to change my husband. I don't have to change my kids. I want to raise them right, but I can just trust God. I'm going to do what he says and leave the results to him. You don't have to make it happen. I don't have to worry about keeping the extra rules that all these people have added. I can just follow you, Jesus. It's not about doing more and being busy, but it's about knowing and following you. And I'm going to rest in your finished work. That's what the Lord's Supper really is all about, which we're going to observe here in just a minute. If you have your Bible, turn to 1 Corinthians 11. You know, if he's done the work that we couldn't do, and he finished the work for us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, I think it's in your bulletin as well. As we observe the Lord's Supper, basically, Jesus left us two ordinances, two sacraments, two things that we are to do to remember him. And neither one of them does anything to forgive you of sin. It doesn't earn favor with God. They're both memorials. They're both things that we do to remember or to acknowledge. One is baptism. Baptism acknowledges the fact that we are dead to sin and we're raised to walk in a new life and identifies with Christ and his death, burial, and resurrection. The other is the Lord's Supper. And the Lord's Supper is just kind of a visual, physical illustration of the fact that Jesus actually took on human flesh, actually bled real blood to pay for our sin. And the church at Corinth kind of took the Lord's Supper a little bit too lightly. And so Paul's correcting them in verse 27 of 1 Corinthians 11. And he says, therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself. And so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this reason, many are weak and sick among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened by the Lord, that we may not be condemned with the world. And what Paul tells them is that they need to examine themselves, not take the Lord's Supper lightly, because what we do when we observe this is we're saying, Jesus, I recognize the fact that you died for me, that my sin deserved death. And what Paul's saying is, if you say that and you say, yeah, I remember this and I acknowledge this, but I'm still going to live in unconfessed sin, I'm still going to live in sin, he says, God's going to judge you. And you may have some, I mean, there's some serious consequences for this. So what I always like to encourage people to do is, number one, examine your own heart for just a moment and say, God, show me if there's anything I need to repent of, anything in my life that needs to get right with you. Or maybe you haven't come to know him yet. There have been times in my life where I've just kind of skipped on the Lord's Supper because I really take it seriously. And I know there was a relationship that wasn't right, or there was something else, you know, just wrong in my life. And I said, God, I'd just rather pass this time. And I've seen people do that. And I respect that. I want them to get right, whatever it is, get it right. But it is a time to take seriously our walk with Christ and to remember what he's done. So I want you to just do that right now. Just bow your heads and close your eyes and just say, Lord, show me if there's anything in my life that I need to get right with you. And if you can get it right with them right where you're sitting, then do that. And if not, say, Lord, do you want me to participate in this ordinance or not? But take just a moment and thank him and worship him.